Psalm 142. Now hopefully we'll be able to get through this in time to let you make some observations, which I've said about 14 times and never stop quick enough to do that, but we'll try it tonight. Notice Psalm 142 is tied once again into the life of David. And thus the superscription, part of the Hebrew text, says, Maskil of David, when he was in the cave, a prayer. Now, several things about it. Number one, this is one of the Psalms that's labeled a maskil. Maskil is a Hebrew verb, shakel, that means this. It means to think through an issue. To think through a thing or an issue and arrive at a wise conclusion. To think through and arrive at a wise conclusion. Actually, the word shakel is to be wise. And a maskil psalm is a psalm that looks at a given situation, thinks about it carefully, and comes to a wise conclusion. If you would turn, keeping your finger here, to Proverbs 1 and verse 3. We've got that word again. Proverbs 1 and verse 3. And if you look at verse 3, the purpose of the book is given, which is to receive instruction in wise behavior. And the word wise behavior is the same word as the word maskil. So wise behavior, to think through, arrive at a wise conclusion, or as Proverbs 1 verse 3 says, it talks about bringing us to wise behavior. Doing things that are thought through and are wise and thus successful. So that Psalm 142 is a wise behavior psalm of David. And the purpose of these psalms is twofold. The purpose is derived from these maskil psalms have insight in them. And they, second, give insight. They have insight, and they give insight. So we could translate, coming on to this one, a insight psalm, a wise behavior psalm, a psalm for thinking through something and coming to right, wise, proper conclusions. We might add one other thing here, that when you look at the word maskil, it's a hifil stem in Hebrew. And hifil stems indicate cause, to cause. So, to bring that into the picture, this is a psalm that causes wisdom, that causes right behavior, is the idea involved in it. Third, the maskil psalms were to be repeated and sung by Israel. There were to be repeated, that is, verbally, and not only were they to be repeated, but they were to be sung by Israel. And again, keeping Psalm 142 open, but look at Psalm 47:7. It says that these are to be sung and repeated as teaching tools in Israel. For God is the King of all earth, all the earth. Sing praises with a maskil psalm. And our word skillful is that word. Sing praises with a maskil song. So we're looking then at one of those maskil psalms in Psalm and 42. Okay, with that then, we go to the theme of the psalm in front of us tonight, Psalm 142. And by introduction, we'll look at the superscription, the theme, and the outline. First of all, what do we learn from the superscription of this psalm? This is a wisdom-giving psalm, or a maskil of David, when he was in the cave. Now that helps us, again, to set it in the history, but that has two possibilities. It could be that this was in the cave of Adullam, or this could be in the cave in Gedi. E-N-G-E-D-I. And in each case, we find David in a cave. Let's go to the first one, 1 Samuel 22. We're already familiar with this, so it won't take just a moment to read it. 1 Samuel chapter 22. This is where he is afraid of the king of Gath. So we have in chapter 22, verse 1, so David departed from there and escaped to the cave of Adullam. And when his brothers and all his father's household heard of it, they went down to him. And everyone who was in distress, everyone who was in debt, everyone who was discontented gathered to him, and he became captain over them. Now there were about 400 men with them. So it's possible that the reference here is to 1 Samuel 22. But look also at 1 Samuel 24. And 1 Samuel 24 is also in a cave at a different place, the cave of En-Gedi. Chapter 24. Now it came about when Saul was returned from pursuing the Philistines, he was told, saying, behold, David is in the wilderness of En-Gedi. Then Saul took 3,000 chosen men from all Israel and went to seek David and his men in front of the rocks of the wild goats. And he came to the sheepfolds on the way where there was a cave. And Saul went in to relieve himself, and David and his men were sitting in the inner recesses of the cave. So it's possible that this is the setting. And I think most likely we ought to point out that in both cases, David had been pursued and he was hiding. He was hiding in 1 Samuel chapter 22. And he was hiding in 1 Samuel chapter 24. And therefore, both equally serve as the background for what we're looking back in Psalm 142, and let's return to it. Now, it is true that in the superscription, we need to be specific. It was not a cave, it was the cave. And there are two possibilities. I lean toward it's the cave of Adullam. And I'll show you why in just a moment. But in 142, a maskil of David, when he was in the cave, and then divided off are the words, a prayer. The Hebrew does differently. It puts it in the cave prayer. 142 is an in the cave prayer. So that in the cave and prayer tie together. It's not he was in a cave, then caption a prayer. This is called the in a cave prayer of David. Now, what was the theme of his in a cave prayer? And I think of two titles that we can give it. We could call it this to summarize what is in it. This is the sanctuary of a solitary soul. The sanctuary of a solitary soul. And the emphasis is this one man, all by himself, finds a sanctuary in God. And let's put that with the key verses. First, he was solitary. Look at verse 4. Look to the right and see, for there is no one who regards me. There is no escape for me. No one cares for my soul. And what is he emphasizing? In 142 and verse 4, he is emphasizing the solitary condition. There's nobody to watch me. There's nobody who cares about me. I am a solitary soul. I am all alone. However, for that solitary soul, there was a sanctuary. Verse 5. I cried out to thee, O Lord. I said, thou art my refuge, my portion in the land of the living. So the sanctuary is the Lord. And so we could easily summarize the thought of these verses that I'm a solitary soul. I'm all alone, 142:4. And I am resting in God, 142:5. We could also capture the theme in a second way. We could capture the theme and say this. David was hounded by men or by man. And that is very much the theme of how he was hounded in these verses. Verse 3. My spirit was overwhelmed within me. Thou didst know my path. In the way where I walk, they have hidden a trap for me. And it means every place I go, I'm hounded by man. But the theme continues. While hounded by man, but hiding in God. Now, what about the outline of Psalm 142? How can we put it together? And we'll outline and read it, then we'll go back for the details. Outline 1 through 4 is David's supplication. David's supplication. And that is in verse 1 through 4. His supplication 1 through 4. That breaks down, and we'll break it down in outline, then read it. Under his supplication, we have, one, his cry. 142:1, which reads, I cry aloud with my voice to the Lord. I make supplication with my voice to the Lord. His cry. Second, his complaint. His cry, and now his complaint. 142 verse 2, which reads, I pour out my complaint before him, I declare my trouble before him. Then, finally, his consternation. His consternation. And that is in 142. Verses 3 and 4. Verse 3. And here's the key. When my spirit was overwhelmed. David is in consternation. When my spirit was overwhelmed within me, thou didst know my path, in the way where I walk. They have hidden a trap for me. Look to the right and see, for there is no one who regards me. There is no escape for me. No one cares for my soul. And this is an expression of consternation. Second part. And notice this breaks the paragraph with the end of verse 4. And we now have David's shelter. David's shelter. 142:5-7. Now let's break that down again into parts. the first thing on which he focuses is his refuge. 142:5, which reads, I cried out to thee, O Lord, I said, and we'll see it when we come to a more detailed thing, the word thou is an emphatic pronoun, and thus gets emphasis. I cried out to thee, O Lord, I said, you are my refuge, my portion in the land of the living, and therefore an emphatic statement about where he is hiding. Second, and in verse 6 talks about his rescue. 142:6, which reads, give heed to my cry, for I am brought very low. Deliver or rescue me from my persecutors, for they are too strong for me. And then finally, to close it, is a focus on his relief that now comes about. His relief, 142:7. Bring my soul out of prison, so that I may give thanks to thy name. The righteous will surround me, for thou wilt deal bountifully with me. So that, in essence, is the outline of the psalm. And now let's go back and expound it. And our first heading is supplication. First four verses. Notice our paragraphing, at least a New American Standard Bible, is good, breaking it into two portions. First of all, his supplication and his cry. The first thing to know about his cry in verse 1 and 2 is that in line 1 and in line 2, there is an underlined word. There's a word that is in boldface. There's a word that is first in the sentence. And you might take a look at it for just a moment and ask yourself, when he says, I cry aloud with my voice to the Lord, what is the emphasis in that line? Second line, I make my supplication with my voice to the Lord. What is the emphatic part of that line? Well, the emphatic words that open each line is this, and I'll give you literally the way the Hebrew reads. It says, my voice, literally, my voice to Yahweh cries. My voice to Yahweh cries. And notice, first of all, is the words, my voice, which you would never detect in the English, but that's the way the Hebrew Bible reads. My voice to Yahweh cries. And then second line, my voice to Yahweh asks mercy, or from Yahweh asks for mercy. My voice cries to the Lord, my voice asks. Now, the force of all of this is to remind us of one point. This is not a silent prayer. We are not to picture David sitting in a cave with his head bowed, praying to God. He is not praying silently. The idea is this is not silent prayer. It is loud. In other words, if you had been in the cave and were a few recesses down from David and you were trying to sleep, you wouldn't be able to. Because David is coming out at the top of his lungs and he's saying, I am not simply praying to God silently. Anyone nearby could have heard him. Now, that, I think, carries a lesson with it. And it's this. There is special help to be found in vocalizing our troubles. Special help is found in verbalizing and vocalizing our troubles. It's a sort of anti-stress type thing. Have you ever noticed in the Old Testament how openly they would grieve? They would throw dust in the air. They would tear their clothing. And they would give a full expression of how they felt. And then, what other characteristic? Once they did that, they could end it. Now, we do just the opposite, don't we? Because the sign of strength in trouble is stoicism. Don't cry. She's getting along fine. She hasn't cried today. And that is not necessarily healthy. It's certainly not biblical. And therefore, in the midst of all of this, David screams. Have you ever gotten relief by getting off someplace and just screaming? Remember Jim Marshall? Jim used to do that. I think once Pauline caught him and she thought he'd gone nuts. He was sitting out in his car and he didn't know anyone was around. And he was just venting and screaming and yelling at the top of his lungs. And Pauline, she came up and says, "I've lost a husband." But he mentioned many times how he felt better about it after. It's a cathartic type effect. And as we open up this psalm, David is not holding it in, but letting it out. So he is not holding in, but he is letting out. Not holding in, but letting out. Simpler way, you feel so much better after you've kicked the dog. And, okay, the cat. Whatever. This, again, special help is here. Let me make another observation. The voice can help the thoughts. The voice can help the thoughts. Now, if you have ever taught, you know what I'm talking about. Because very often, in the act of verbalizing the lesson, I learn something. An idea comes that I have never had before. As a matter of fact, this is not in my notes. I just thought of it. And the reason I just thought of it is I'm in the act of doing what? Verbalizing. And when you verbalize, it's a way to think. It's a way to use your brain. People do that enough that we even have a expression for someone who talks to themselves. And it's not nuts. It's called a what? A soliloquy. It's the author of the work talking to himself. And we all talk to ourselves all day long. I hope I'm not the only one that I talk to myself on the freeway. I talk to myself when I'm driving. And Betty has caught me at times moving my lips. And she reminds me that makes the other person feel strange. And I just say, well, I'm going over the lesson. And so a voice, a verbalization, can help clarify thoughts. And therefore a very helpful thing. That is his cry. Now let's look at his complaint. His cry, and now his complaint. Verse 2. Now there's an emphasis in verse 2. And the emphasis is on the direction his voice takes. And I think you could probably see the double emphasis on what in verse 2. I pour out my complaint before him. I declare my trouble before him. So the direction his voice takes is Godward. Now we know that that is the only direction it could take because of the teaching in verse 4. He makes note, there's nobody in this cave with me. By the way, when he looks around and tries to find someone who is regarding him, which one of these two psalms that we started with? Notice I said the cave of Adullam and checked it as the more probable. What was with him in the cave of Adullam? Well, the cave of Adullam, he had about 400 people. And the cave of En-Gedi, you didn't have the 400 people, though you had some at that particular point. So probably leading toward these two caves put together. Okay, his complaint, notice it was directed toward God. I think we ought to ask a question here of ourselves, and let's simply put it down and you think about it later. And the question is this: where do we find our greatest relief? Pouring out our troubles to a friend or pouring out our troubles to God? Don't have to answer that, but it's a good question. Where do we find the most relief? Or where do we find greatest relief? Pouring out troubles manward or Godward? You know, how often when we do pour it out manward, and this is not taking one of these to exclude the other, haven't you ever talked to a friend and you just told him about the situation and then felt better? I've even had people thank me for the good advice when I didn't give any. You did all the talking, but the cathartic effect was good. And in this context, David has no one human, but that is okay. He can still vent and give his troubles out and pour them out to God. Now, we should add one other thing. When in verse 2, he pours out his complaint, this is not to inform, so that God is sitting there, and as David pours out his complaint, God is saying, oh, I didn't know that was so. I'll jot that down in my notes. You just now informed me of something I wasn't aware. God is totally aware of there. It is not to inform God, but to relieve yourself. Not to inform God, but to relieve oneself. Now, question, and be careful with this. Where did David find refuge? Now be careful. Where do you find refuge? He found refuge two places. Did you catch it? In the superscription, where did he find refuge? In a cave. In verse 5, where did he find refuge? In God. So you have an important question. Where did David go for refuge? And if you say to a cave, you're right. He fled from Saul to a cave. And if you say he found refuge in God, you also are right. So which is true? Was it in a cave? 142, 1. Or in the Lord? 142, 5. Which was it? And the answer to that is both. David flees to a cave and he also flees to God. We've said this so many, many, many times. Does God more often save with a means or without a means? Does God most often encourage us directly or indirectly through someone else? What is more typical of God? God's delivery is typically mediately. And therefore, within this context, it was the Lord who was a refuge, and the Lord was saying to David, stay in the cave. So this is the, might put it this way, the cave was the means. God was the source. So that you can't say all you need is a cave. You can't say either all you need is the Lord. The two are linked together. And let me give you a passage that makes that so clear in 2 Corinthians chapter 7. 2 Corinthians 7. Now you look at chapter 7 because this is crystal clear in verse 6 and ask this question. Who comforted Paul? Who comforted Paul? But God, who comforts the depressed, comforted us by the coming of Titus. So God was the source and Titus was the means. And therefore very, very clear that Paul was depressed and he got encouragement, 2 Corinthians chapter 7 and verse 6, where the Lord was the source and Titus was the means. The Lord was the comforter. So was Titus. And I take it in this context, neither one would have been adequate by itself. Because the Lord is saying, through this man Titus, I'm going to help your depression, Paul. So God was the source of it, but he used a means to do it. And that's very, very important teaching, because we say, and it sounds so good, and I've said it, and I will say it again, but not to the exclusion of a means. All we need is God. And isn't that really true? But God, in turn, says, I will use a means whereby I will be sufficient for you. So God's help is more often mediate than immediate. It is more often indirect through an instrument than it is direct. And that is very, very, very important. For our attitude toward fellow believers, you do not need me, all you need is the Lord. Well, toot, toot. That's a pious answer, but you're leaving something significant out. That's like a man struggling by the, a lady struggling by the road to change a spare tire, and you come along and give her a Bible verse and say, God bless you, I'm praying for you. It would help if you'd help change the tire. And that is the plain idea that's involved in here. And so notice we can take that back to 142. And in this context, David, where did he go for refuge? He went two places. He went to the Lord and he also went to the cave. It's like you trust the Lord to get you safely home. But watch all the stoplights. Because if you don't watch the stoplights, you're going to get squished. And so the stoplight is the means whereby you allow God to take care of you. If you're out in the middle and there's a storm coming up and it's about to tip the boat, pray as hard as you can and row as hard as you can. Both are involved. Neither eliminates the other. Well, notice next, he comes on to his consternation. And that begins in verse 3. His consternation. verses 3 and 4. Now, in verse 3, there's an interesting term that starts the verse, and it's this. When my spirit was overwhelmed within me. What does that word mean? It is very colorful. And let me take you two places for the word overwhelmed. First, Isaiah 3. Isaiah 3. I was overwhelmed. And we're looking at Isaiah 3 and verse 22. Can you find the word overwhelmed in Isaiah 3:22? And while I often miss the address on a passage, yes, it is in Isaiah 3:22. You pick it out? 3:22 talks about festal robes, outer tunics, cloaks, and money purses. See the word outer tunics? It's the same word as overwhelmed. Can you see a connection? The outer tunic just covers everything. And overwhelm is like saying, I am just covered over. It's like you've thrown a tunic around me. And my troubles are that way. And that's what I feel mentally. When you are so busy mentally that you can't, we have expressions for it. We say, I'm just swamped. Or I'm overwhelmed. I can't think, and it's like a tunic. It also means something else. Isaiah 57. Isaiah chapter 57. And we're looking at verse 16. And again, do you want to see if you can pick out the word? Verse 16 says, I will not contend forever, neither will I always be angry, for the spirit will grow faint. Grow faint is our word. Overwhelmed. So to be overwhelmed is to grow faint and to grow weak. All right, let's take that back then to the passage of Psalm 142. Answer this. In Psalm 142, does David fear? Yes. Does he also believe? Yes. Can fear and faith reside in the same heart? Absolutely. Let me give you something that the idea of you believe and yet you fear, and any believer that's realistic knows that's been the case. I know God will deliver me, and then the other voice that says I'm afraid. I know He'll deliver me. I hope He will. Yes, He will. He might not. And any believer does that kind of battle. This is on the inside. Faith and fear can occupy the same heart. And I love the way, I don't even know who this man is. All I know is the book was very yellowed. Something about 1840 it was written. And his observation is along the line of how you can have fear and you can have faith in the same heart at the same time. Quote, in the realm of the soul, there are often shadows where there are no clouds. You get his point. There are often shadows, that's the fear, where there are no clouds. I'm really believing him. So the shadows and the no clouds can be a reality in the realm of the soul, which is a good observation. Now, coming down to a further idea in verse 3. When my spirit was overwhelmed, he's in consternation. Yes, he's believing, but boy, it's difficult. I'm in consternation that it's no my path in the way where I walk. Now, the question that is involved there, what does he mean by my way? And he also has the expression there, does he not, my path? That it's no my path in the way I walk. So my way, my path. Now, there are two ways with the Hebrew Bible you can go on that. And both of them can be correct. One of them is my way simply is a reference to his present adversity. It's a reference to his present adversity. My way, my path, represents all of the trouble and all of the problems that I'm having right now. It can be a reference to something else. It can be a reference to my way of escape. My way of escape. My way out would be the idea. My way of escape, or, and I see no reason why both cannot be involved in this particular context. I would lean, I think, toward the second because of Psalm 143. He is talking about taking refuge in God, and as he takes refuge in God, verse 9, deliver me, O Lord, from my enemies. And that would mean the way out. You're my refuge, and therefore you are my way out. And I think in the light of 143, verse 9, that probably leans in his saying in these verses, thou didst know my path in the way where I walk. You know the way out. They've hidden a trap for me. And of course, hidden traps would imply that God is able to guide him through this so he doesn't step in one of them. One of the landmines. Okay, finally, his emphasis is look to the right and see. Now, what does it mean when it says look to the right? And we have a passage there, and the passage deals with looking to, or expression has to do with looking to his right. That bore a technical meaning. It was the place where your witness or legal counsel stood. It's the place where your witness or legal counsel stood. It was the place from which help came. And in many contexts, it's used of legal help of that sort. So he says, look over to the right in the witness stand, and there's nobody there. Look for my attorney, and my attorney is not there. I don't have an attorney. Look to the right and see. And right, inevitably, is the place from which help comes. Let me establish that in just two places quickly. Psalm 109:31. And Psalm 110:5. 109. Psalm 109. And verse 31. For he stands, that is the Lord stands, at the right hand of the needy, to save him from those who judge his soul. Notice the idea of help coming from on your right. Psalm 110 and verse 5. His confidence is this. The Lord is at thy right hand. He will shatter kings in the day of right. Can you think of one other place? I didn't put this in my notes, but I thought of it as I was verbalizing this truth. 2 Timothy. Last chapter. Someone else who was in the same situation. 2 Timothy. And he is also within a legal context of a Roman trial. And says at verse 16 of chapter 4 of 2 Timothy, at my first defense, no one supported me. The witness box was empty. But all deserted me, may it not be counted against them. But in that box, the Lord stood with me and strengthened me. So notice you have a parallel instance over in the life of Paul that is parallel to Psalm 142. There is much, much, much New Testament doctrine in the Old Testament. And here is a good example of just exactly that. All right. Now, we got a problem, and the problem comes down in verse 4. Verse 4, look to the right and see, and obviously there's no one there. For there is no one who regards, or better yet, there is no one who is concerned about me. There is, catch this, no escape. There is no escape. How do you reconcile that with verse 5? I cried out to thee, O Lord, and said, you are my refuge. And those two words, by the way, refuge and escape, are just a hair apart. So he's saying in verse 4, there's no escape. And in verse 5, he's saying, there is escape. In verse 4, he's saying, there is no refuge. And in verse 5, he's saying, there is refuge. What is his meaning? Is there refuge or is there not? Well, I think the answer to that is there is none in man, but there is in God. Now, inevitably, when we think we are all alone, and we all do, because we all tend to think our pressures are unique, no other soul has ever known them before. I was talking early this week to a pastor who is in really deep pressure and problems. And he said, he says, you've been around 35 years. Can I just kind of tell you some of the problems? He said, they're really different. And he started off and he named four. And I said, can you hold up for just a minute? He said, sure. He said, well, I'm holding up because I want to laugh for a second. Because you're going down a list that I'm familiar with. He said, you are? Well, see, that's always the tendency to isolate ourselves. And here's what he is doing. Now, when he says, there is no one who cares for my soul, there's no one there, was he right or was he wrong? Read verse 7. Bring my soul out of prison so that I may give thanks to thy name. The righteous will surround me. Was there anyone out there or was there not? Well, I think we're back to the same thing in verse 4, that you have the kind of vision that focuses on the problem and says there's no one. Who else had that problem? Remember him? Elijah? Didn't he have the problem? Why, there are only so many who have not bowed the knee to Baal, and we're really a majority. And God says, no, you're not. I can show you 7,000. And so, always in a pressure, watch out for the kind of thing, and it's always a human tendency that says no other human being has been through. Thousands have, up and down the line. All right, let's close then with now David's shelter. Oh, that's where we're at, David's shelter. And we covered... Well, we kind of messed this up, didn't we? Well, okay, let's go back to his shelter. 1, his refuge. And that's verse 5. And for memory's sake, he's going to say two things. The Lord is my haven, and the Lord is my hope. The Lord is my haven, the Lord is my hope. The idea of haven is found in the words, I cried out to thee, O Lord, I said, and he yelled this real loud because it's a great, big, emphatic pronoun in Hebrew. You, and it indicates a shift away from things into the Lord. You are my refuge, that is my haven, my portion. And portion always has to do with one's most prized hope, one's most prized possession, and therefore it refers to his hope. And you're my portion in the land of the living is an idiom for as long as I live. His refuge and now his rescue. Verse 6. Notice the rescue apparently is not finished yet. Give heed to my cry, for I am brought very low. And the reason is the enemy is too strong for me. So notice David's confidence is not self-confidence. I'm low, the enemy's bigger, I can't win. But what does that do? Well, that in turn causes him to turn to the Lord. Finally, his relief. And that's verse 7. Notice, by the way, a comparison. Notice he's moved from seeking friends to finding friends. In verse 4, he's seeking friends. What is he doing in verse 7? He's finding friends. Bring my soul out of prison so that I may give thanks to thy name. The righteous will surround me, for thou wilt deal bountifully with me. So notice David's delivery not only helped him, but the righteous surround, and they are also given his testimony. And David is not as isolated as he thought he was. We are never as isolated as we think we are. Father, thank you for this psalm of David, and we're thankful for the way it is so practical. We can identify so easily with David when we have that inner struggle where fear and faith are both there. And we recognize that this is normal. David was not abnormal. But David was a man who always brought himself around on the Word of God. And we pray that through his Psalms that you have given to us, we will be able to do the same thing. In Christ's name, amen.